Neil Gaiman is the author of the much-loved books Coraline and American Gods, as well as the comic book series The Sandman. He's married to musician Amanda Palmer. They recently had a child. But he's also a former journalist who's written on everything from Lou Reed to Syrian refugee camps. And his voice. He sounds at times like the late Alan Rickman in Harry Potter or as the hookah-wielding caterpillar in Alice. Who wouldn't want to sit next to Neil Gaiman at a dinner party?
I believe that in the battle between guns and ideas, ideas will eventually win, because the ideas are invisible and they linger. I think perhaps the genius of Lewis was that he made a world that was more real to me than the one I lived in. And if authors got to write the tales of Narnia,
if literature is the world,
then fantasy and horror are twin cities divided by a river of black water. The horror place is a rather more dangerous place. I wrote, and I became a better writer the more I wrote. And I wrote some more, and nobody ever seemed to mind that I was making it up as I went along. They just read what I wrote, and they paid for it. Well, they didn't. We woke up every morning glad we were alive, and went to sleep every night knowing we might not wake in the morning. There are so many ways to die in Syria now, says Yelda.
Well, now you can sit with Neil, sort of, through his new hefty collection of essays, talks, and articles from over the years. It's called The View from the Cheap Seats, and Neil Gaiman joins us from the BBC studios in London. Neil, nice to talk to you again.
It's lovely to talk to you, Robin.
You do sound like Alan Rickman, the late Alan Rickman. Do people tell you that?
Every now and again, yes. And I got to meet Alan once before he died. And tried to listen to him going, do I sound like you?
I feel an essay coming. Okay, the title of the book, The View from the Cheap Seats, it's also one of the essays. You had the cheap seats once at the Oscars?
Yeah, Coraline, when they made a wonderful animated movie of it, was nominated for an Oscar. And Up was also nominated for a Best Animated Film Oscar. And Up was also nominated for Best Feature, which obviously it wouldn't win, so it had to win Best Animated. So we sort of felt that being there for Coraline was a little bit perfunctory. But I went anyway. And it was, unfortunately, the first anniversary of my father's death.
Yeah.
And I obviously didn't know myself very well, because I thought I would be completely fine. And instead, I was very melancholy. And the piece I wrote is kind of funny and it's kind of odd. And if you've ever wondered what it's like to be in the mezzanine at the Oscars, I try and tell you.
Well, that was the point. The cheap seats were the mezzanine. You weren't in a wonderful mood anyway. And then you are up there. At one point, you want to try to go see somebody down in the A-list area. They won't let you. And you're thinking of like starting an insurrection, getting everyone in the mezzanine to go downstairs. Another point, Neil Patrick Harris is singing an Oscars song and several people on Twitter congratulate you because they think it's you, Neil Gaiman. I mean, it's just lovely. Why put together all this writing, by the way?
Mostly because people started asking for it. You write introductions because people ask you to write introductions, and you say yes when it's something that you go, what a great idea, the world needs to know about this. I will tell people why I love James Thurber's The 13 Clocks, or I will tell people about this book I love, that book I love. I will write about Sherlock Holmes or Dracula. And I think also as time's gone on, I've written some more important pieces. I've written about Syrian refugee camps in Jordan. I've written pieces about reading, about libraries that have in their strange way gone viral.
Yeah.
There was one piece that I wrote that was the most read article that The Guardian newspaper put up a few years ago.
Is that the one about libraries being so important and reading being so important? We need libraries, we need books.
That's the one. It's about libraries, reading, and daydreaming and why they are important things.
Yeah. Well, with that in mind, I'm just wondering, you know, we saw the dedication. It's to your little guy, Ash. Is part of it that you wanted him to know?
I did. There's an interview with Lou Reed. It's sort of an article about Lou Reed that also goes into an interview. And there was something that I said to Lou at the time, where I said, you seem to have started having opinions on things. And he said something like, well, I think I'm old enough, and I think I've earned those opinions. And I guess that's true of me, too. I started out as a young journalist with very little to say. Now here I am, aged 55 and I have opinions and there are things that I have learned and there are people that I've known that I wanted to remember here.
Well, stay with Lou Reed, because even before you were a journalist, you were 13. You were a Bowie fan, but then somehow someone gave you Live at Max's Kansas City and now you're a Lou Reed fan. And, I mean, just the writing about Lou Reed. Brian Eno said that only 1,000 people bought the first Velvet Underground album when it came out, but they all formed bands. That may have been true, but some of us listened to Loaded over and over, and we wrote stories.
You know, it's very interesting, because when you're a writer, people ask about your influences. What you tend to do is start listing other authors. And one of the things that I realized back when I was writing about Lou was actually he was probably as important as any other author to me, that he wrote 3-minute long novels, these tiny compressed portraits of people, these things that happened, these things where you felt like you were coming in late and filling in the blanks.
In Berlin, by the wall, you were 5'10" tall. It was very nice. Candlelight and Dubonnet on ice.
You also named a daughter from an earlier marriage after Warhol superstar Holly Woodlawn, who is, of course, in Walk on the Wild Side. And then you had to tell her that.
It was wonderful. It was absolutely glorious. One of those things where I was putting together a playlist for her at her request, with her sitting by me, of songs she had loved when she was 3, 4, 5, 6 years old. We got up to Walk on the Wild Side. And she said, "You named me after this, didn't you, Dad?" And I said, "Well, yes, I did." And he gets up to the bit where shaved her legs, and then he was a she. And she says, "Hang on, Dad, you named me after a drag queen in a Lou Reed song." And I said, "Yes, darling, yes, I did." Thinking this is the awkward conversation that we've been waiting for now for 19 years. And she just hugged me, grinned, said, "Oh, Daddy, I do love you." And then she went and wrote that down on the back of an envelope in case she ever forgot that conversation. Which was a rather wonderful thing to happen.
Holly came from Miami, FLA. Hitchhiked her way across USA. Plucked her eyebrows on the way. Shaved her legs and then he was a she. She says, "Hey, babe, take a walk on the wild side." Said, "Hey, honey, take a walk on the wild side."
Well, so much about Lou Reed. Your interview with him, your conversations about he wanted to turn Berlin into a graphic novel. Just great stuff there. But that's just a small portion of the book. There are very scholarly takes on things like the tulip craze in Holland and what it has to do with comics. As we said, you went to a Syrian refugee camp. I love the detail that this was an important UN mission, but the very first couple of lines, you're in the tent with refugees and you keep knocking over their water bottle.
And in order to refill their water jug, they had to walk for 5 minutes to a large standpipe. And unfortunately, it was out by the time they got there. And they were going to have to wait hours until there was another water delivery. And it really brought home to me just how much we take for granted, the idea that you can turn on a tap and there is water.
Yeah. And perhaps there's a little of it also doesn't matter if Neil Gaiman, who writes all these wonderful essays and people want to hear him speak, and A Wonderful Life with Amanda Palmer, you're kind of reduced when you're in a refugee camp and you kick over somebody's water.
And you feel like an idiot. Then again, I manage to feel like an idiot a lot in this. I'm very good at tripping over things. And at one point in the Oscars piece, I get to tread on Rachel McAdams' dress. There's even a photograph. It's the only photograph in the whole book which we put in just to prove that I wasn't making it up. There's a wonderful moment where I picked up the LA Times and saw their entire back cover was a photo of the Oscars, and front and center, right in the middle, is me looking at Rachel McAdams' dress to see if I had left a footprint on it.
Nothing like that to bring you right back down to earth. Neil Gaiman, his new collection of essays is The View from the Cheap Seats. By the way, just, I mean, are there things that you're feeling compelled to write about now?
Mostly what I'm feeling right now is an enormous urge to go back and start making things up. I definitely feel it's time to go back into these strange, weird woods and cellars and start making things up again.
Neil Gaiman, again, his new collection of somewhat old essays is The View from the Cheap Seats. Neil, thanks as always.
Thank you so much, Robin. That was so much fun.